ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by Paul Feinbaum and Matt Barry.
What a Saturday we had in college football. Alongside Paul Feinbaum, I'm Matt Barry. This is the No Sleep edition of the ESPN College Football Podcast, which you can get 5 days a week, but it starts here on Sundays with Paul and I waking up, probably me a little bit more so, just rubbing our eyes, shaking our heads, and enjoying what was another spectacular college football Saturday. Paul, good morning. How are you?
I'm just refreshed. I got up really early this morning, about 5:45, put on the I guess you were live at 6 o'clock, or maybe I saw you and Joey and the gang, and it's always fun after a good night's sleep to watch you guys and then see you a couple hours later and wonder, what's wrong with this dude?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you're sleeping with, like, cucumbers over your eyelids. You guys do your... You do your SEC Nation in the morning, then you're on the Paul Feinbaum jet back home. It sounds like a quality life you're living there.
Well, it's much better. Once you went off the Sunday morning sports center, that meant I didn't have to fly all night from College Station or wherever to get to your little burg up there and then hang around all morning while you were doing baseball scores so we could do this podcast.
You know, so if I'm to credit for your improvement in quality of life, whose quality of life yesterday, Saturday, improved like yours the most after one of the wildest Saturdays we've seen in a while?
Yeah, I mean, there are very few winners on the college football board right now. And, you know, I think Alabama is really one of the more interesting stories. But I would say Penn State probably the biggest winner of the day, because all of a sudden, a school that no one was looking at a couple of weeks ago now is undefeated in the Big Ten. You know, has two impressive wins. They're not great, but they're impressive. And questions abound about the Crimson Tide, which I'm sure we'll get to.
Yeah, you know, I look at Penn State because we didn't know, Paul, what that win against Wisconsin was. And it was kind of one of those vintage Big Ten games. It was, you know, 3-3, 10-6, whatever the case might be. It was a low-scoring, punchy-in-the-mouth football game. And so for one of those reasons, I thought, okay, if Auburn brings their athletes up to Penn State and they try to play that type of game if Auburn brings those type of bats to Penn State and they try to play that type of game with the Nittany Lions, that could come out and get them. And Sean Clifford continues to play good football. Tank Bigsby for Auburn, he stepped up. Bo Nix was hit or miss. There were some costly mistakes. But overall, Paul, watching that game for four quarters, Penn State was just the better football team. And that's a huge statement to make for the Big Ten when a program like Auburn comes up and you can say, you know what, we went athlete for them and we were the better team for four quarters.
Yeah, I think some will probably overrate this because Auburn is from the mighty SEC. But I do think swimming in these SEC waters on a minute-to-minute basis, Matt. I mean, Auburn got rid of a coach. The program had fallen to about fourth in the SEC West, and I thought the hype for Auburn going into the game was way overdone. I mean, they hadn't done anything. They hadn't beaten even a bad team. I mean, they'd beaten two mannequins, pretty much. And they still played well, which, you know, you can analyze this a million different ways. I mean, they competed. They took something out of the game. There were some questionable decisions by Brian Harsin in his first really big game at Auburn. They didn't lose much from it, but, you know, the problem for Auburn, it's their schedule. I mean, oh, my goodness. I mean, they have Alabama and Georgia remaining. They have A&M, Wolf, and Arkansas. Take your pick. And Ole Miss and LSU. So that was really a critical game for them to be able to at some point claim a good season. And now they just have the schedule to negotiate, which I don't think they'll do very well.
Yeah, Penn State, they get the win 28-20. And you mentioned Auburn. It was a good opportunity for them to go up to a hostile environment. Everybody talks about the wideout game and how special it is. And it is. The atmosphere was absolutely electric. We didn't get to see it last year, obviously, because of COVID. So I think it made it even more special. But when you look at the Big Ten now, with what Penn State was able to do, Ohio State continues to underwhelm. Iowa looks really good. I mean, there are a lot of teams that you could argue as we sit here on Sunday morning where you could say, you know what, this Big Ten is wide open. And I don't think for any stretch of the imagination that you can't say that Penn State right now, the morning after, is the best team we've seen in the Big Ten this year.
Yeah, I would agree. And Matt, let me talk about Ohio State for a second, because you can ask the question, who's the most panicked fan base in the country? And the list is long, okay? But Ohio State, has that ugly loss. They're still in a state of chaos on defense. There were a lot of empty seats at that game. There's some things to start being concerned about with the Buckeyes. And, they drop another game or two, and you have to wonder how quickly the bottom starts to fall out of this program. But, I would agree. The team we're not talking about yet is Michigan, and I'm not really ready to talk about them. Good for Jim Harbaugh. He can beat up on the 5-year-old down at the end of the street. Call me when you beat somebody up that's your size, Jim. Yeah, but Iowa is still a contender. I mean, the Big Ten is very interesting and exciting right now, and I can't wait to start seeing some of their games play out, because we have not paid attention to the Big Ten for a couple of years because it's really been a one-team league.
But I think Paul, that's kind of the overarching thought across the country. As we sit here this morning, I mean, I'm looking at it. You watched the whiteout last night. You're like, okay, Penn State, Sean Clifford, Jahan Dotson, Noah Kane. They've got a great defense. James Franklin connected to USC. He's going to get them coached up, ready to go. You could sit here and say, all right, well, Big Ten appears to be wide open. I'm not sold. I don't think Clemson's the best team in the ACC anymore this season. I just don't. They didn't look good yesterday. So I don't know, aside from maybe, trying to think right now, Oregon's clearly the best team in the Pac-12. The Big 12, sell me on the Big 12 in Oklahoma. Basically what I'm getting at is I think every conference is wide open.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned Clemson. I don't think people understand how bad a shape Georgia Tech is in. And you can give me the lightning delay and old Dabo trying to talk about, man, we had to go back out there for 18 seconds and then had to go back in. I mean, who cares, Dabo? Just go out there and show some dominance. I mean, you can't do anything but hope your defense bails you out at the end of the game to prevail. I mean, that's embarrassing. That is really embarrassing for a team that a lot of folks had winning the national championship. Matt, this wasn't just a contender like Ohio State. This was a team that people had winning. And DJU, I'm not blaming him entirely. His offensive line has issues, but you're right. I mean, the ACC is we could spend an hour and a half trying to debate who's a bigger mess, the ACC, the Pac-12, add the Big 12, but the ACC right now is a total embarrassment.
You look at Clemson now, they're 2-1. Of course, the one loss they suffered was to Georgia, and it was an ugly, it was the final score there, 10-3, I think. I mean, it was an ugly game, but Georgia got the win. North Carolina stumbled out of the gate against Virginia Tech, who stumbled on the road at Morgantown, which is a tough place to play. But North Carolina put up so many yards and points last night in that game against Virginia, which is wildly entertaining. So you can't really, typically 3 weeks into the season, still early to determine what we know, who we know. But I said it last night on College Football Final, or one of the halftimes, I don't remember because there was just so much TV on Saturday, that the best thing that happened on Saturday overall was that Alabama didn't go into the swamp and blow the doors off Florida, because it was 21-3 at one point and we were headed that direction. The fact that that didn't happen, I thought, was one of the great things for the sport, because now we sit here and we're like, well, wait a second, everybody can be beaten, and I think that's good.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of people that thought this game was going to get out of hand, and Matt, a quarter into it, we're programmed to think one more play, here it comes, and this game in the swamp is got nobody left but Tebow and the Gator. What happened yesterday was fascinating, because we're not even sure at this moment, Matt, that Alabama is the best team in the SEC, let alone the best team in the country. And 2 weeks ago, I mean, it wasn't the two of us. I mean, I was talking to normal calm people. Heather Dinich. I mean, Heather, I've done 1,000 shows with Heather, and every time I've done my usual, she looks at me like, oh my goodness, this guy, you know, would somebody like, you know, put him in a cage and calm him down? She said, go ahead and give the trophy to Alabama. That's how much in awe we were of them after that Miami win. Of course, we didn't realize that Miami was the USS Titanic about to hit the iceberg. So, but Alabama's got some defensive issues. Matt, the usual suspects have been telling me best defense of Saban's era. It's not. I mean, they were – Alabama was incredibly fortunate to get a win. They didn't need that game to go into overtime.
No, they didn't. And they with what we needed was a better play call for Florida on the two-point conversion.
Oh, I mean, dreadful.
I've had more – even in the Auburn game, that fourth down that they called, that Bo Nix overthrew the receiver, they got tangled up and fell down. What is it about these offensive geniuses, air quotes – where they can call the greatest game, and then anytime you get down goal to go and you have to call a ball play for a two-point conversion or a fourth and goal near the goal line. I mean, it happened in Virginia Tech, too, against West Virginia. It's like the wizardry comes to an absolute halt because they either, A, try to overthink the room, or, B, they just can't execute near the goal line to extend a game.
But Dan Mullen was making Pete Golden into an absolute and utter fool for three quarters of that game. Pete Golden, for those who don't know, is he is right now the defensive coordinator at Alabama. I mean, he was a total joke against Mullen, and all Mullen has to do is just call one of the same. I mean, just call the same play you've been. You know, Emery was killing it on that short pass. Just try something. I mean, even Alabama got tight down near the goal line. I don't know what it is. Don't give it. Just quit over. You know, we know what the percentages are, but the percentages were with you to keep doing the same thing that got you there. And they didn't do it. And Alabama finally made a stop. It only happened to be the most important stop of the year for them.
But why do they abandon it? You sit there. And I'm sure Florida fans listening to this or other college football fans were yelling at the TV with us, but out of all the effort you made to get back in that game, again, at one point it's 21-3. Palmer gets up to go to the bathroom because he thinks this thing's cooked. Galloway's yelling at me or something. And we look at it, it's 21-3. We're like, okay, great. We're going to have to find something else to entertain ourselves during this 3:30 window. But then little by little by little, you spend that kind of effort to get Alabama on the ropes, and that's the play that you put your season on. It drives me absolutely nuts. And I don't know if you noticed the camera cutaway, Paul, but there was a cutaway right after the play where Mullen looks down at it. I didn't see which coach it was, and you could almost mouth them saying, well, what the hell was that?
Well, Mullen claimed after the game, I can't remember which player was in the wrong position. Well, okay. Is that my fault? The only thing worse than that play was trying to understand what was going on the last 5 minutes of the game. I mean, I have watched Russian movies in Russian and understood what was happening better than I understood. You guys are watching it between the clock and the chaos. I needed a stiff drink after that game. It had nothing to do with the actual game.
No, it's almost like you needed to sit there and have a cigarette because you're like, what in the – it was – again, you can take a million things away from that. If you're Florida, what were we talking about all week? I mean, you guys had the SEC Nation bus out there in Gainesville. Everyone who would listen saying Anthony Richardson, he's the guy that's going to lead us to the promised land. Yet he didn't play yesterday, although we saw him backflipping on the field before the game, which made zero sense to me. But all of a sudden you wake up and like, well, maybe Emery is the guy. Maybe Emery Jones is the quarterback. I don't know. What did you take? What now of the SEC East? Is that performance enough from Florida enough to convince you at the cocktail party they can do it to Georgia? It was just one of those games where you leave it and you're like, huh, they probably could have won that, but I still don't understand.
Yeah, well, I mean, on one hand, you know, only a fool would not have seen that game on Alabama's schedule and gotten a little tight in the throat. You knew that there was a potential tough game there, but I think we all paid too much attention to the games later in the season, like the A&M game, which may not be that anticipated at all. But Matt, I think Emory Jones played a really good game. He's not perfect, what will Richardson do? Would he have made a difference? Yeah, he would have, but I don't know what else he could. I don't know what he could have done. Other than maybe run the 2-point conversion in, that would have given them more of an option. But I think Florida is in the same spot it was in before the game. It essentially had about a 2-game season, and the next game is for all the marbles. It's the Georgia game. I felt before the season they'd go 10-2. But they wouldn't get much credit for anything because they lost to the top two teams in the country. And I don't see that changing. I don't think anybody else can beat them, but certainly not the game at the end of the year against their arch rival Florida State.
We do this every year because we've become, and I think this is one of the bad things about the sport, because we've become accustomed to, let's call it 4 teams, maybe 5 teams that always dominate. And we're used to blowouts. We're used to, oh, here we go. It's October. They're undefeated. Here we go. Wouldn't you say right now, this season through the first few weeks is about survival? Because every single team that has playoff aspirations has had to survive.
I would agree. And what you want to do now is allow yourself the opportunity or afford the opportunity to be in position when it really matters. And, you know, that's what Oregon did a couple weeks ago. That's what Georgia did. And you see a lot of schools throwing that opportunity away, UCLA being one. Other school, Clemson, simply can't find its way back. Ohio State is going to struggle to find its way back. I think we are watching more chaos than we predicted, because we do tend to get caught up, Matt, in, well, it will be the same four as it always is. Well, this year it's not going to be the same four. I think that much we know. Two of the regulars at the party are in deep trouble, and the other semi-regular, Oklahoma, looks terrible.
So let's pivot there to Oklahoma, because if you look – I'm going to go top 8 here in the country. Alabama, number 1, 31-29. So there's a 2-point win over number 11, Florida. Georgia, number 2. They got a South Carolina team that we knew that they would pummel 40-13. So they're that one take out of the conversation team for the day. And then now Oklahoma, number 3 in the country, 23-16 to Nebraska, 22.5-point favorites, game of the century, blah, 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 the big rivalry between the two traditional programs. And Paul, if not for a fortuitous bounce on an extra point, and then one of the great interceptions in college football history, there's a chance Scott Frost goes into Norman and sneaks out of there with a win. As it is, Oklahoma only won by 7 points.
No, and I didn't pay much attention to the Tulane game. It just seemed like a feel-good story that went wrong, and Oklahoma suddenly won the game. But yeah, you have to be very concerned about Oklahoma, and you know that is not good news for a Big 12 that already has seen Texas lose, has seen Iowa State lose, Oklahoma State give them credit. I mean, they survived yesterday, but their luck will run out. So I don't know what the answer is, and I also wonder about Spencer Rattler. I mean, he's best quarterback in college football. He's number one draft. Blah, 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 blah. Where'd we get that from?
I don't know. And I'll tell you this right now. I don't think it's even close that Matt Corral is the best quarterback in college football. You can't convince me otherwise. We'll sit there and watch Spencer Rattler and we're like, what is he doing? And I don't know if defenses have caught up to Oklahoma's scheme with Lincoln Riley. I don't know. But Spencer Rattler's not the best quarterback in college football. It's Matt Corral. And you just have to wonder, and I'm looking now at some of the top teams in the country, Bryce Young's obviously ahead of his game as a sophomore. Georgia still, I mean, they leave a lot to be desired offensively. JT had a couple of big plays. So then you bring in Spencer at three. You bring in Anthony Brown at Oregon at four. You bring in Petrus at five at Iowa. You bring in DJU at six at Clemson. Calzada for Texas A&M at seven. Ritter at eight with Cincinnati. Then you got CJ Stroud at nine and Sean Clifford at 10. Paul, those are the top 10 teams in the country. Did I give you anything in terms of, hey, this team's got that can't miss quarterback that's going to lead them to a national championship?
No, you didn't. And I by the way, I agree with you about Matt Corral, and we are a week away from talking about Matt Corral versus Bryce Young. Not to skip past next week's slate, although I have thought about it.
Yeah, well, let's go to Ole Miss, because they can 61-21. Matt Corral, three rushing touchdowns or four passing touchdowns, seven touchdowns total. I can get the math figured out here. He was absolutely remarkable, as has been Ole Miss throughout the year. The defense is doing just enough to keep them in games, and I think that makes them incredibly scary. Paul, you know what jobs open out on the West Coast. You cannot tell me that with what Lane Kiffin is doing, that week by week by week, that that's going to start getting some steam of Lane Kiffin and flirtations from USC. Not saying Lane's allowing the flirtation. I'm just saying USC is going to keep looking and say, hey, we had this guy. Maybe he's matured. Maybe he's grown up. Maybe he needs to come home.
Well, first of all, he has matured and he has grown up and he's not the same coach. And from a selfish standpoint, Matt, I hope he gets the job. So Lane will quit blaming me on television every time he's on our show for me getting him fired in 2013 for a comment I made on College Game Day, which, by the way, may have expedited. He was going to get fired. It just maybe expedited it by a week.
Give us the comment. Refresh the memory for
okay,
the people.
Okay, well, we'll go back to – I think they were – you may remember. I think SC was playing at Arizona on a Saturday night. And we did it. It was before the SEC network had launched, so I was on game day that year. We were sitting there in Georgia, and I was asked about Lane Kiffin and the quarterback situation, and I just went off on Kiffin, you know, being immature and a baby, and how he wouldn't have his job without his father, Monty Kiffin. And at the end of it, I said, Lane Kiffin has become the Miley Cyrus of college football. And if he doesn't grow up quickly, like tonight, he is going to find himself on the unemployment line. So that's what I said. I can assure you, everyone on the crew cringed, because Herbie and Fowler and some of the other guys were close to Lane. I didn't know Lane at the time. Now, that night they got run. I think it was Arizona. Could have been Arizona State. And the next morning, as you know, he was fired on the tarmac.
Yeah, that, okay. I didn't know if you were leaving. That it was Arizona State. It was the one that got him fired.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so here's what happened. SportsCenter breaks in about 7:30 in the morning, and they started running my clip of the Miley Cyrus of college football over and over again for 6 hours. Now, many years later, I'm sitting with Lane one day, and he says, you know what really happened? I said, Lane, don't start up on this. I did not get – he said, yes, you did get me fired. I said, what happened? He said, that morning, the president at Arizona State – excuse me. They were obviously at Arizona State. The president of SC was having coffee – downstairs at the hotel with Pat Hayden, the AD, and game day's on, like it would be at every football operation. So they say, coming up next, you know, will Lane Kiffin survive? So the president turned it up. He said, I got to see what they're saying about Kiffin. And when I said what I did, Kiffin told me, the president turned to Pat Hayden and said, if we lose tonight, I want you to fire his ass. And the next morning, he got, of course, fired on the way back. And Lane says, I don't know anything about the president at the time, but he was very susceptible to public relations. And when he saw that, and then the terrible performance that night against ASU, it was over. So I know that was a long story to explain why I really hope Lane gets that job.
No, it's a fascinating story for people that don't remember what happened in Lane Kiffin and his coaching career, which has seemed to get opportunity after opportunity at a young age. Of course, he was in his early 30s, maybe 32, when he got the Raiders job, the infamous Al Davis overhead projection screen. Then he goes to Tennessee for the year. Then he goes to USC. Then he's put in coaching exile, has to go to the Nick Saban rehab coaching stint. Then he goes to FAU. Then he leaves FAU now for Ole Miss. And here he's got Matt Corral. I pulled up the stats, 23 of 31, 335 yards, three touchdowns in the air, rushing 13 carries, 68 yards, and four touchdowns. And now Ole Miss, 17th in the country, at least after Saturday, 3-0. Paul, we've been talking about how this thing's wide open. Why not Ole Miss in the SEC West?
Well, it's certainly not an impossibility. And the game 2 weeks from now against Alabama, it will be intriguing. We know what happened last year. It was a shootout. And you know, Alabama was in danger in that game, Matt, as you well remember. We know Alabama's problems on defense have always been against skilled quarterbacks. And this guy, as you just got through saying, is extraordinary. So I think you have to look at that as one of the most important games in the, of college football, on the college football calendar, that quite frankly, I don't think anybody was looking at a couple of months ago.
So Ole Miss has the week off, and then that's October 2nd, the game that you're referencing. And again, coming into the season with Ole Miss, it was like, can the defense just be palatable? Can they just allow less points than we're going to score? Because we're going to score on everybody. And Alabama this week, this coming week, they've got Southern Miss, 7:30 Eastern SEC Network. So they have one game prior to Ole Miss. But it's just one of those games, and we didn't get to talk about this last week because the news had happened after we got off air about the Clay Helton firing. But you can put Ole Miss squarely in one of those conversations of, because USC has a coaching problem, now Ole Miss, who's off to a great season, Lane Kiffin's going to have to answer about all of that. James Franklin's going to have to answer about it. Kalani Sitake at BYU is going to have to answer it. And all of a sudden, Paul, you got all these coaches having great seasons, and now their head coaches are all being looked at as potential candidates for the USC job.
Yeah, and we know now why they made the call, why Mike Bohm made that call, because what happened against Washington State is what Clay Helton has been doing. You know, it looks like he's dead man walking. He'll go out and win a game. And you know, if Helton had not been fired, we would still be talking about his future today, but it wouldn't be as hot as it was a week ago. So that's why he needed to go. And I don't have any problem with it, but it creates a lot of issues. I thought Franklin got through the week. The most important thing is he won the game. Lane hasn't really been asked about it yet. In fact, he was on our Saturday morning show yesterday, Matt, and I was tempted to ask him, and I just thought, it's not quite that time, because it's hard for me to believe he would be a serious candidate based on what's happened, but he should be a serious candidate. And as good as James Franklin is, and I think James Franklin would be a fine, an excellent person to look at, I think Kiffin in some ways may be better. He knows the terrain. He was an assistant there. He's been a head coach there. And I don't think there would be a more popular guy in L.A. than Lane Kiffin. What a story. It's the ultimate Hollywood comeback story.
It really is. It's redemption at its finest. And just being a Pac-12 person and being around that conference my entire life and knowing how alumni work at USC, they love sizzle. They're not about, if this was about substance, Paul, they would go get Kalani Sitake and it would be done, right? If this was truly about substance and a guy that's going to coach your team without penalties, unlike the team they played last night in Arizona State. But if he was about substance and getting the right hire, it would be someone like Kalani Sitake. But the sizzle factor with these USC alums and the money and the influence and everything in between, they are without debate having conversations of, how do we get Lane back to USC? how do we get this guy who's running his offense to absolute perfection in the SEC? He's been rehabbed through Saban, FAU. Now is it, how do we get this guy back? He's ours. He's rightfully ours.
And he really is a fantastic football coach. And I don't think he gets enough credit because he's cute on Twitter and he's got the shaky pass. I mean, you have to remember, Lane Kiffin's the only coach who already had taken another job in 2017. He'd done a fabulous job at Alabama as the offensive coordinator. He had taken the FAU job, and after the first round underwhelming performance against Washington, which Alabama won, Saban had to fire him. He fired a guy who already had taken another job and quit. But that's Lane. He wasn't ready for the Raiders job. He wasn't ready for the SC job. And by the way, he was succeeding Pete Carroll, which was very difficult to do. And I think we are finding out 12 years later how difficult that was. Go ahead and hire him. He would be fantastic.
Yeah, it's going to be one to watch because now, you know, we have so many other stories developing that perhaps we didn't think we'd get. And I believe Ole Miss is one of them. I believe Arkansas is one of them. We're going to see them against Texas A&M. And based on some of the injury issues A&M has at quarterback, could Sam Pittman pull off another one with A&M being in the top 10? For me, one of the biggest storylines coming out of Saturday, I was talking with our producing staff about this last night before college football final. If you're a college football fan, which we all are in the 80s and the 90s coming up, you could set your clock to it that Miami and Florida State were going to push you around every single Saturday with one of the best brands and attitudes in college football. Paul, it is sad what is going on with Miami and Florida State.
Yeah, let's take Miami first. And while I have always liked Manny Diaz, I mean, you have to start objectively thinking about this. He's not going to be able to get it done there. I mean, it almost seems like a lost cause. And that's sad because he brought a lot to the program and it seemed like they were trending in the right direction. But you start losing games like that one yesterday and you wonder and worry about the path. Now, Florida State is a different situation because I swear I feel like I'm watching the Willie Taggart movie part two. And I didn't think, and I don't think anyone thought we would, because Mike Norvell has a really good reputation. Taggart did too. And I thought he was pretty close to getting this program back. But when you start off like this, Matt, there's nowhere to go. You're a laughingstock. You're a joke. And that doesn't only affect you on the field. That affects you in recruiting. I mean, think about this. You know, we know what happened just 2 weeks ago. It's hard to believe it's only been 2 weeks. But since then, since that loss, they have the Florida State Seminoles, one of the greatest brands in modern college football history, has lost at home to Jacksonville State and beaten soundly on the road to Wake Forest. Yes, you heard me. I'm not making something up to see if I can get a reaction out of you.
They were saying yesterday during the broadcast, because we had the fortune to have Florida State Wake Forest on ESPN, which is in our ear all afternoon, but we got to do the cut-ins in halftime, that Norvell was telling people, guys, we're two plays from being 2-0. All right, so I'm going to give him that. I'll give him that. You're two plays from being 2-0 against Notre Dame. You iced your own kicker. You missed the field goal. Everybody knows how that happened. And then you had absolute abhorrent defense to end the game against Jacksonville State. Okay, fine. You're two plays from being 2-0. Then what was Saturday against Wake Forest? If I give you that you're two plays from 2-0, then you have to give me an explanation for what happened at Wake Forest.
There is no explanation, and that's why Norvell's lost all credibility. I don't care what you were. I care what you are. And where do they go now, Matt? I mean, you're 0-3. And you still have, well, I mean, I don't want to give the ACC too much credit, but you still have an ACC schedule plus Florida at the end of the year, which is going to beat you black and blue again. And I mean, if you're an FSU fan, you've lost all faith, and that's unconscionable.
help me out here, Paul. And I love on a morning after a long day where I can use the great Paul Feinbaum as a voice of reason. And I think the college football audience loves that as well, because the conversation you and I are leading down in this path is Manny Diaz at Miami, who I'm with you. I think that thing is lost. It is absolutely lost. But the guys that they had coming back, I called their spring game and I'm looking at their depth chart. I'm like, my God, this team has everyone coming back. They're loaded. I know they lost some guys in the defensive line, but they brought some transfers in. So the fact that they're playing the way they're playing, they just got their teeth kicked in against Michigan State. And what you're saying about Norvell, we're leading down that path of maybe these guys aren't going to work. But last week on the podcast, you heard me, or on your radio show at SEC Network, you heard me rip USC for jumping the gun too soon on Clay Helton. And now I've got ASU fans waking up this morning coming at me saying Herm needs to be fired because of the lack of discipline. And all I want to say to these people after 2-3 weeks of the season is shut up. Not everyone goes undefeated in college football. Let the thing play out and make a decision. So where are you with these two coaches at Florida State, Miami? Is it, have you seen enough to understand that this thing's not going to get right, or just does it need to be in the oven a little bit longer?
Yeah. I think these are a little bit more, I think Mike Norvell it's too early in the tenure, and he was a well-credentialed coach. So I'm not going to suggest that. I think the bigger problem is Manny Diaz, because once you get that out there, it's hard to undo, especially when you have guys like Mario Cristobal who are at the top of the food chain, who it's hard to imagine a more popular hire than Mario at Miami right now. You know, maybe not a couple of years ago, but now he would certainly, you know, be number one on the list. So I think you have to let it play out, but you also have to worry about this. If you get to late October, early November, and it looks like Diaz is going to be fired, who are you competing with for coaches? We already know it's SC. Could it be Arizona State? Possibly, because of a lot of things. Yeah, I mean, that's a real problem for them. I mean, we don't need to waste the audience's time how we feel personally about Herm. That's not going to save his job if that investigation keeps percolating. And there are plenty of other jobs that will be open. So you have to start thinking about it. And, you know, the Miami AD is a really smart guy. He's been around a while. I'm willing to bet you he's thinking about it right now.
Is that a job where you can win? Palmer and Galloway and I got into an argument about this for a good bit yesterday. Those two obviously played high-level college football, Jesse at Florida and Galloway at Ohio State. Both of them were remarkable college football players. My argument was, well, hell yeah, you can still win at Miami. And they're like, well, what do you mean? The facilities are garbage. The campus, it's too far away. I still think there's something to it where if you get the right guy, Cristobal, who's got a connection to the community and the program, that you can still win at Miami.
I think the window is closing. And I hear you loud and clear, because we all know what Miami has been. But they aren't there now, and you know, they had that moment 3 years ago with the turnover change when the whole world revolved around them. One of the problems with Miami, it's also the same for SC, is that you got a lot of alums who think they own the program. So they are going to be heard loudly in a coaching search and a conversation about whether a coach stays. And I still think they're a relevant program in college football. This isn't a dinosaur like Nebraska that you have to go a little bit deeper into college football history. And I know what Nebraska did yesterday, but I still think Miami can be saved.
I do too. And I'm with you. Those in the alum that you're talking about, you're not talking about the donors that hang out in the suite. You're talking about those guys that used to roam the sidelines and the former players. And it is unique to the sport. I would say of all of the alumni base former players, I'd say Miami has the most, how should we say this, unique.
Yeah.
When it comes to, go ahead.
They're in your face. And
yes, there you go.
And they are loud, proud, and arrogant.
Yeah. And don't tell me that Michael Irvin's not going to be in a plane up to Eugene to get Cristobal down there.
Sure, he will be. And, you know, I'm beginning to wonder, though, about another guy who might ought to be in a plane. And if this thing at Florida State goes longer and it gets worse,
I know who you're gonna say, and it rhymes with loops.
Yep. So I'm beginning to wonder about that, Matt. You can go ahead and break.
Why does he keep getting passed over? Mark Stoops, Kentucky head coach.
I don't know. But you know, he's got pretty good ties to that school, and he's done nothing but build a solid, honest, and really good program at Kentucky.
I agree. They keep defying expectations. Will Levis, the transfer from Penn State, has Kentucky playing good football right now. We're going to get you out of here with this one, as we always do, because we have the benefit of absolutely nothing to look forward to. We had the headline last week coming into this week's podcast. So now as we sit here Sunday morning, the week four slate rather kind of leaves a lot to be desired, but I would love, Paul, for us to get into our college football podcast crystal ball and forecast what we will see a week from today.
Well, I think one thing, a couple of things, Matt, in the SEC, somebody is going to be hurting badly. And if it is Texas A&M after the Arkansas game, the complete landscape of the SEC West will have permanently changed for the year. I don't mean long term, but we went into the season talking about that October 8th game with Alabama as being one of the defining games of the year in college football. So that will exit. And then if that exits, then what about Arkansas? So I do think, I know that's not a story that if you're in Montana, you're giving a lot of thought to, but it is. I think this is an unusual week, Matt, where I guess the Notre Dame Wisconsin game is the biggest game of the week, but to me it sounds very gimmicky.
Yeah, and I'm with you in that Texas A&M, they lived dangerously with Colorado the week before, who just got absolutely pummeled by Minnesota 30-0. So that's one you got to watch. I'll give you the one to watch, and I'll fully admit here on the ESPN podcast, I'm not afraid to admit when I'm wrong. I was dead wrong about Auburn. I thought Auburn would go up and get the win in Happy Valley. I thought they had more athletes. I was wrong. Penn State was the better team. So I'm not afraid to get on here on a Sunday morning and admit when I was wrong about a prediction. But, Paul, I am telling you, Oklahoma, if they think that they're going to keep playing the way that they have next week against West Virginia, you would better think twice about the Big 12, because if West Virginia goes in and beats Oklahoma in Norman, now what? Because then you've got your conference's best team, who's been shaky from minute one, with a loss, and now the whole thing gets thrown into chaos.
Very true. And Clemson goes into NC State too, which doesn't sound very exciting, and it really isn't very exciting, but as poorly as they are playing, a road game against an average team, it could be dangerous for them. So, we are at the dollar store here trying to find a good game for next weekend.
Yeah, but see, you know, typically when you're at the dollar store, it's when you find something that you least expect. So I will caution the college football listener and viewer, in the weeks that don't have much sex appeal, you're going to find something by the end of the day that's like, huh, I'll take you home.
And there's one more game I want to point you to, and it's not a game on anybody's radar screen. But if it goes the wrong way, we will have a topic next Sunday morning, and that is LSU at Mississippi State. Mississippi State,
I love it.
Which just got, I mean, has anyone ever been ripped off more at the end of a game by the officials than this team? If LSU loses that game, that will be loss number two. And topic number one will be Edo's future.
Yeah, let's real quickly, now that we're on that game, there was a statement from the SEC on the Mississippi State-Memphis game saying at 5:58 of the fourth quarter of Mississippi State at Memphis, Mississippi State punts the ball down the field where the loose ball touches multiple kicking team players before a receiving team player picks up the ball and returns it for a touchdown. The kicked ball remained live by rule since it was not possessed by a player, nor did it come to a rest inbounds with no player attempting to secure it. On the play, the back judge gave a single stop the clock signal immediately after receiving the team, after the receiving team possessed the ball. The inadvertent signal aspect of the play is reviewable, and replay should have stopped the game to review for a potential inadvertent signal. The subsequent review would have placed the ball at the spot where the signal was made. On the same play, two Memphis players were wearing number four, which is a violation. It should have resulted in a 5-yard penalty on Memphis.
Is that difficult to interpret? Pretty much saying that Mississippi State should have won the game, isn't it?
There you go. So I just wanted to give you some clarity on what you were talking about with the listener. You're right. That game, Mississippi State, LSU, those are the type of games where the cauldron gets a little hotter on a fan base that's getting a little impatient.
And the worst part about that game for the loser, it's the first game of the day on your network. And listen, I'm not trying to sell the game. You're doing
a great job of it, though. You're remarkable.
If you're at a sports bar, you're watching it, but it's not a compelling matchup by any stretch because you have two teams that are in trouble. So, I mean, that's just something that interests me. And the reason why it would be so interesting is we're still only a year and 9 months removed from Ed Orgeron being the national coach of the year and the national champion.
Yeah, but so is Gene Chizik. And now sure. He sits in the studio with Doering and Peter Burns talking about SEC football. So things happen quick. You wake up and life will pass you by. All right, reminder that ESPN reminder the ESPN College Football Podcast is 5 days a week. So be sure to rate, review, and follow so you don't miss anything. You can catch Paul on the Paul Feinbaum Show weekdays from 3 to 7 PM on the SEC Network. I'll be back tomorrow with Kirk Herbstreit with warm reaction from this weekend, and we will start to look forward to Week 4. Plus, the Peabody and Emmy Award-winning 30 for 30 film series presents Once Upon a Time in Queens, a 4-part documentary event about the city, the swagger, and the wild ride of the 1986 Mets. This documentary explores the epic tale of one of baseball's most dominant teams and iconoclastic teams and their legendary World Series comeback. Hear from former Mets players and fans, including Daryl Strawberry, Keith Hernandez, Bill Burr, Cyndi Lauper. I mean, you get Cyndi Lauper in there, you're going for it. All four parts of Once Upon a Time. Well done, pop culture. All four parts of Once Upon a Time in Queens available to stream on ESPN Plus and the ESPN app. Paul, I always enjoy it. I look forward to next week. Go get a workout in with your Cyndi Lauper soundtrack, and we'll do this again next Sunday.
Thanks, Matt. What a pleasure, and I cannot wait.